is Alternate Take. I am your host, Danny Rodriguez. Welcome back to the show. On this episode, man, I brought you guys one of my favorite comedians in the world and just an all-around great dude. I brought you guys Mr. Steve Simone. Steve Simone has been around for a long time, dude. He is a comedy legend. He started out at the Comedy Store, where a lot of great comedians have started out. And if you get your geeters there, you know, you already have the highest level of respect in my book and on anyone's book in the comedy world. So it was an honor to get to talk to him, man. He shared a lot of his great wisdom, how he got started, and what he's up to now, man. And happy to call you a friend now, brother. So without further ado, I bring to you guys the great comedian, Mr. Steve Simone. Alternate Take, what is up, you guys, man? We are back, and I brought you guys one of my favorite comedians, man. I brought you back Mr. Steve Simone. How you doing, sir?
Dude, I'm honored and blessed to be here. I'm doing great.
Man. I'm excited, man. I've heard about you, and I've told this to a couple of comedians now, but I've heard about you on the Church of What's Happening Now. That was like the
Uncle Joey's. Yeah,
Uncle Joey. Yeah, that was my first podcast. I probably got like in a routine with where I was like, you know, I'm probably gonna just listen to every episode, and I don't care who the guest is. I just wanna, you know, it just felt nice. I feel like when you're a kid, you need like that uncle figure in your life, you know.
Oh, and Uncle Joey is, that's exactly who he is.
He's
the greatest. Like, you can feel how much he loves you, you know, and that was always the most special thing about, like, what I loved about the church. It's like Uncle Joey put this vibe out there where everybody, it really is a family. He would say that. He's like, what's up, church family? And that's what it is. Like, and I was afraid. Like, Uncle Joey's so funny that whenever I was on his podcast, I'm like, I'm just getting out of the way. I'm just happy to be here. And what's Uncle Joey going to do?
Yeah. My favorite would be like, Steve Simone, come on, tell me what's going on. And then you'd talk for like, I don't know, 30 seconds, this. And then he would tell you a story that like probably wasn't directly related.
The absolute best. And what I loved is, like, every once in a while, I'd be like, Steve Simone, I need your good heart. I need your good Catholic heart. Could you just come on the church? And like, I would just be there and then he would just go. Like, what an honor.
But you know what's funny is that's exactly what I admire about you. That's what people respect about you, to be honest, is like, even felt that comfortability with you that like, I can tell this guy anything and he's not going to judge me for it. And he's going to be my friend. And I think Joey felt that about you. And I think a lot of people feel that about you.
That's the best thing I've ever heard. Thank you. Because dude, that's what it's all about, right? Like, we get so busy in life. We get so caught up with all the silliness, but it's all about love.
Yeah, that's, man.
That's everything.
I couldn't agree more. And that's what I was drawn to. I mean, I think when I got into podcasting, it was early. I was in high school. It was like 2009 or 10.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it was funny because I didn't have anyone to talk about it with. Like, none of my friends cared about that kind of stuff. And I had
you were ahead of the curve.
Yeah, it was the education that I didn't know I needed. You know, I couldn't focus in school and I had no interest really. And it wasn't like a ADD thing, I don't think. I didn't care. Next thing you know, I'm listening to Joe Rogan and there's a scientist there. And I'm like, I don't know why I care about science all of a sudden, but I do. It's awesome. Like,
dude, he just made it. Joe Rogan made learning cool.
Yeah, for real. He really did.
What the whole educational system has spent trillions of dollars to try to do. That's amazing. I never thought about it like that, but yeah, like I tune into his podcast and I'm like, physics? All right. Intermittent fasting? Like whatever. The Anunnaki? Like it's whatever it is. It's so cool.
It is. It's the best. That was the one thing I was so excited with. And especially because I'm also like a goon too. I'm not like Mr. Smart. So like the episodes with like Steven Tyler or episodes, I'm like, okay, this is perfect. This is like, I get the fixes of like the being smart part, but then also I get like athletes on there. Yeah, the UFC fighters. It's great. But with Joe,
you know,
is cool? Different.
Oh, go ahead. You can learn from all of those people. It's all lessons.
Absolutely.
Like I think that was part of the reason why everybody loves Uncle Joey, is that he's got so much wisdom.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Like, he's number one, a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person. But he's lived so much life. Like, whenever Uncle Joey tells me to do something, I don't question it. I just do it. Because number one, I know he loves me. I know he's got my best interest.
Right.
And number two, he knows what he's talking about. Like, when it was time to leave Los Angeles, Uncle Joey was like,
We're like the Marines. We leave no man behind. Steve Simone, you're getting out. I don't want to hear it. You want to come back? Come back after the smoke is cleared. We're leaving. I ain't leaving without you. And it was like, yes. When Uncle Joey says do it, you do it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Man, that's great. It's great that's how I got introduced to you. I mean, because to me, it's just like you said, to reiterate the whole point I was trying to bring up was that, like, I trusted any guest that he put on the show because I trusted him. I trusted how his, like you said, the family atmosphere on the podcast. Like, I knew that he brought someone on that he cared about. So when you came up, I mean, you're on the show, I don't know, like almost 10 times probably at somewhere around there. And it was just always comforting. You reminded me of like a good cousin I have or a good friend. And, I'm glad we get to do this, brother. I'm glad we get to do this.
This is awesome.
So tell me how you started comedy. Like what made you get started, and where was even your first set? How did it all start for Steve Simone?
It's so funny, cause the first word that came to my mind was misery. Like, I grew up in a fun house, like a funny house. Like, you know, growing up, there's like every family kind of has their vibe. Like, you're like, oh, that's the whoever. They're really good athletes. You know what I mean? Like, we're all the kids. They play all the sports. Or then there was a family where like everybody's walking out of the house with glasses and books. You're like, that's the smart family. We were just always funny. You know, like my house was kind of like the house where all the kids in the neighborhood would come over and just see what was going to happen next. Because it was chaos. I'm in the middle of three boys. My grandmother moved in when I was about 10 years old. So there was always something happening in our house. And my parents were super cool. My dad was a big, big comedy fan. And I remember being really little and them letting me watch guys like Richard Pryor, guys like Eddie Murphy. And the truth is, the only time I really knew my dad was happy was when he was laughing. You know, so it was kind of like, okay, I want to do that. I want to make people happy. I want to keep the laughs going. So as I went through school, like, I remember the first time I ever got a laugh, like in it, cause I would get them in the house and around my buddies, but in front of a classroom, I was in third grade and we had a spelling thing, like a spelling bee where they make you stand in front of the class. It was brutal. And I didn't know that I was dyslexic. I didn't know why, like, I didn't understand spelling. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. And I remember, like, there was a word and I had no idea what I was doing. And Mrs. Jeanette, she had gone to Mexico, like, on a vacation or whatever, and she kept a sombrero in the front of the classroom. And I didn't know how to spell, so I just put on the sombrero and just started to dance for laughs. And I was like, oh, this is a good feeling. And then in fifth grade, I remember we had a school play. Or I got to play a jester and I killed it. Like, I was getting laughs and I was like, this was awesome. But I didn't think about it as a job until nothing else worked out. So I totally feel like God's got a plan and he works in mysterious ways. And when you think you're at your lowest, that's just the beginning of where he can start to do his work. You know what I mean? When you hit that part where, like, you're like, I got no other option. And then that's when Jesus is like, well, you ready for me? You got one option left. It's me. And I was going through a quarter life crisis. I hated everything, dude. It's so funny. Like, I just got really motivated to do comedy again because I'm mentoring a guy. His son teaches me jujitsu and he's in his 40s. And he's always wanted to do comedy. So I'm like, okay, this is God. I'm here. This is one thing I can do. I can help you become a comedian. So I was like, that's it. There's an open mic tomorrow night. We're going. Don't overthink it. Let's just go. And I was surrounded by all the open mic comedians. And I hadn't been in that kind of environment in a long time. And it brought back so many memories. It really inspired me to, like, this is why you did it. Like, I remember what it was like, not like, I remember doing comedy and I was like, if this doesn't work, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. Cause I hated everything so much. And, first time I got on stage, first time I did stand up, I hadn't reached that point yet where it all, like, I experimented with it before I pushed all my chips in. And there was a little comedy club in Baltimore, Maryland called Winchester's. And I remember I didn't have a car. I had graduated from college and I was taking the bus to a job interview. And I was like, well, I don't want this job. But as we were passing, the bus was this comedy club. And I was like, you know what? I don't want this job, but if I get it, I'm going to do an open mic. Like, it was kind of like how I was planning it in my head. So I do the open mic, my first time on stage. I brought a ton of people. And I did, they let me go on last, and I did like 20 minutes. And I killed it. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I don't need a job. And then I bombed the next couple times. Then the comedy club stopped doing open mics. And then I got a real job in corporate America. But in the back of my head, I was still like, I want to do comedy. And then everybody, I was like 22, 23 years old. And it started to depress me when people were like, oh, you missed your calling. You should have been a comedian, like coworkers, like cubicle buddies. They're like, you're so funny. You should have been a comedian. And I'm like, I'm 23, bro. Like, I could still do this. You know what I mean? But then it wasn't until I was about 27. Like, I'd done a couple open mics. I tried to figure out where shows were. And I did everything I could to try to make a normal life work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I had, like, jobs that I hated. And then I landed a dream job. It was really a miracle. Because I don't come from money. I didn't know anybody. I just took a non-paid internship with the Philadelphia Eagles, which was my favorite team. And I was like, this is it. This is the dream. This is what I always wanted. But even that started to feel like work. And I just felt like God kind of gives us all talents, and yet you have to use them. You have to do what he wants. And I think the circumstances of my life, as I got more and more miserable, and all my buddies were getting married, I was about 27, and I'm like, how come I haven't met anybody yet? And then, like, all the dudes that we would go crazy with, like, 22, 23, now everybody started to settle down and stuff, and I'm like, what am I going to do with my life? And then I was like, I got to do comedy. I have to do this. And I took a vacation to LA, and it was crazy, because I used to, like, get drunk and lie just so people would like me. Like, I was like Chunk from Goonies, you know? I'm like, Michael Jackson used my bathroom. They're like, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
But his sister did. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know where that came from. I guess I was really insecure. But I was so excited because I had heard about California my whole life. And I'm like, California is the coolest place in the world. Because they're like, you grow up thinking about the American dream and the California dream. And that was real. There was a point in this country where, like, everybody, starting with the gold rush, you know what I mean? Like, everybody that really wanted to live a life of dreams, that's what California was. That's what Hollywood was. And I remember being a little kid and seeing this movie called Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where a guy, Jeff Spicoli, played by Sean Penn, it's brilliant. He got a pizza delivered to his classroom. I'm like, California's awesome. And then, like, in the late 80s, early 90s, there was the whole gangster rap scene that came out of LA. And I was like, California is awesome. And I just wanted to go where everybody was cooler than me. Life was better. The sun was always shining. And if I was going to get rejected by girls, at least they'd be dimes. I remember thinking that. Like, I was like, these Philly chicks are trolls. I'm like, you don't want to date me? I don't even want to date you. I'm going to go to where all the hot chicks are. And I went there on a vacation. And stuff happened that was really miraculous. Like, I remember seeing there was a kid, I had even taken like a comedy class when I was in Philly, And there was the one other funny guy, was this dude, Marcus Molina. And I remember like checking out the Comedy Store. Marcus was a dude I hadn't seen in like a year. He was working the door at the Comedy Store. And I'm like, wait, what? You're here? You're from Philly, but you're at the Comedy Store? How does this even happen? And this was just meeting him on a vacation. And then like, I remember going to the Improv, and there was Marcus again, working the door at the Improv. And it was the night of the American Comedy Awards. So I'm hanging out with Marcus at the door, and I'm helping him open the door, and all my comedy heroes are coming through that door. I'm like, there's Dom Irrera. Oh my gosh, he's the funniest guy ever. So then I made the whole trip about comedy. And I remember seeing Damon Wayans with a notebook in the Improv for like eight people just working stuff out. And I was so naive to the process that because I wasn't really a comedian yet. I'd probably been on stage maybe 10, 15 times over 5 years or something. I thought comedians just walked out on stage and said what was ever off the top of their head. That's what I thought. I thought like an HBO special, you just walk out and be funny. And I saw Damon working stuff out. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that's how it was done. And I remember seeing it. And I'm like, I know I could do that. Like, I know I could do that. And I remember going to the Comedy Store. I'm like, I didn't see anybody. I mean, this was a long time ago, but I remember going, these guys suck. I could do this. And then I saw one of the best comedians in the world working it out. And I'm like, I think I could really do this.
Yeah.
And then I got to meet Damon that night at the Improv. And he was so cool, dude. Like, he was one of the biggest stars in Hollywood. And there he is taking time out of his night to talk to me about comedy. And I remember he looked at me and he goes, don't go back to Philly. He was like, you're already here. The toughest thing is just getting to LA. Trust me. He goes, you might go back and you might never come to LA. It's like, you've made it this far. He was like, forget your job. Don't give him the 2 weeks notice. This is what you're going to do now. He's like, because I know you're going to make it. I'm like, really?
Wow.
He went, I know you're going to make it. He goes, don't take this the wrong way, but I can look into your eyes and I see that you're crazy. I was like this, what? And he goes, no, that's cool. He goes, look into my eyes. I'm crazy too. What it takes. And I remember him telling me, he goes, you're going to be poor for about 10 years. And he goes, but it's going to go by fast. He goes, you're going to have so much fun. He's like, you got to do it. And I'm like, whoa. And then I remember my buddies picking me up at the Improv. They were like, oh, did you have fun at the comedy club? I'm like, yeah. I hung out with Damon Wayans. And they're like, whatever, dude. Why are you lying? Because they all thought I was telling Chunk from Goonies lies again. They're like, I'm like, no, I really hung out with Damon Wayans. So I'm sure you did. And then later that night, we were in a club. And my buddies from Philly that were with me at the time, the one guy, God rest his soul, was like a really big, intimidating guy. And wherever he went, he got offered jobs. Like, people are like, you want to do security? Do you want to be a bodyguard? Are you an actor? Like, he was really, he had that thing. Like, I even remember, like, the sheriff's department pulling over, and they're like, where are you guys from? And they were cool. They were, and this big guy was making everybody laugh. And, in hindsight, I guess people maybe thought he was my bodyguard or something, because that night we were in a club and this guy in a suit taps me on the shoulder and he's got a little Playboy bunny lapel pin. And he goes, Mr. Hefner would like you to join him for a drink. I was like, what? And in a booth was Hugh Hefner with like six playmates and let me sit down. And I'm like, I'm a kid from Philly on vacation. I'm like, what is going on? What? And it was when he had like the three blonde girlfriends and there was two brunettes in the mix. And we're drinking champagne. And then they start to realize that maybe I'm not famous. I remember there's like talk at the table. And then the one girl's like, I'm asking. She goes, now what show are you on again? I'm like, oh, I was smart enough not to lie in that situation. So I went, oh, I'm not on a show. And they were like, well, what are you doing? I was like, that guy just invited me to come sit down. And they're like, okay, great. So then I went whisper down the line again. And then as Mr. Hefner's bodyguard, same dude in a suit, bald head, older dude. And he just goes, thank you for your time. And I'm like, thank you. And I just got up and left. And I was like, never would that have happened in 1,000 years in Philadelphia. So then I was like, I came back to Philly. I quit my job because the big guy was like, he would call me Sally Graziano. He'd be like, Sally Graz. He goes, we're going to move out here. I'm going to pay rent for the first year because he was making a lot of money. He was like, you just go be funny. We're going to make it. This guy already wants me to be in a movie, this and that. Then I come back to Philly. I quit my job. And the big my big tough buddy was afraid to leave. He was afraid to go for it. So here I am. I don't have a job. I quit my dream job at the Eagles. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. And a stand-up comedy contest. Like, this has never happened. A friend of mine at the gym was like, Bass and Guinness are sponsoring a contest called Laugh Your Bass Off. If you make it to the finals, Pauly Shore is going to host it. I'm like, really? And I remember my goal was just to make it to the finals so I could always say I did a show, a comedy show with Pauly Shore. Because like, I was like, that dude's famous. If I do comedy one time with a famous person, that's sort of like, I felt like maybe I could walk away or something. And I enter the contest, make it through the first round. I think there was another round. And then the finals was in front of 1,000 people. Pauly hosted it. And I crushed it, dude. I crushed. And I remember I did a joke about seventh grade dances and how I would break dance to try to impress girls. And I did like the worm across the stage. Pauly came out. Like, place is going nuts. Pauly comes out, calls me back out, and we did the worm together off the stage. And he was like, dude, you should be in LA. You should be at the Comedy Store. And 2 months later, with like no money, I had about $2,000 saved up, no credit card, no job, nothing. I just drove across country. And I wound up almost immediately getting a job in a pizza place, but I was still afraid to call Pauly's road manager. I'm like, they're not going to remember me. And then they did. And then they got me a job as a production assistant on Pauly's movie. And I was making $50 a day, then delivering work. As soon as I landed, you had no money. So I had to work. But then Pauly saw how hard I was working on the movie. And I remember this like yesterday. I got to the movie set about 8 o'clock in the morning. We worked till about 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And about 1 a.m., nobody else wanted to really work. And I was carrying a love seat up a flight of steps by myself. And Pauly was walking down. And he called me that night at 3:30 in the morning. He's like, I really appreciate how hard you've been working for me. I'm gonna help you get a job at the Comedy Store. And then I got a job answering phones at the Comedy Store. And that's it. I just stayed at the Comedy Store until I started to, where I am now.
That's so damn crazy, man. Oh my God. Like, you know, you said something that, man, I was like, that's gospel. You said something that was so relatable, I think, to so many people. You said that that if comedy doesn't work out, I don't know what else I got. And you said it's like good thing that you kind of failed at certain things so that we can have the opportunity. I was literally just talking about this with a buddy yesterday because comedy is always something I've always wanted to do. But you make up every excuse in the book not to, you know. I got work. I can go pick up overtime, make more money. I got to go to my kid's baby shower. There's always something. Not my kid's something. Baby shower. Yeah. But we were talking yesterday. We're having cigars, right? Nice. That's a party. Yeah.
Dude, how great are cigars, by the way? It's perfect buzz, perfect conversation.
It's the best. The conversation. I don't know what it is about a cigar. All of a sudden, you start speaking truths. You start getting vulnerable.
Yeah, dude, it's the best. Yeah. It's like a podcast. It's like the next thing you know, you're like.
It is. Yeah. We have two totally different like things going on in life. And I told him like in confidence, I was like, I almost believe like if I got fired, like I would be an animal. Like I would be like unstoppable. I would do comedy every day. And like, but I was like, but if you know that in advance, why don't you just do it no matter what? Like,
you know what? I have to figure it out. I think at least this is my opinion on that. Cause I remember there's something about a dream that's, for lack of a better term, it's intoxicating. There's something about a dream where you're like, okay, right now everything sucks. But when I do comedy, it's going to be better. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like for me, I remember thinking like, when I move to California, everything's going to be better. And the thought that it could be better was enough to get me through the sucky stuff.
Right.
Thinking that, okay, when I get here, it's going to be good. And the fear I had was, well, what if I do get to California? What if I do start to do comedy? And that sucks too. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Like it's that fear. It's like that fear of failure, that fear. And let me tell you, when I got to, my life was terrible before I left. The wheels fell off when I got to LA. Fell off. Like it was the worst. I hit a rock bottom. And like that was, in hindsight, that's the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because forget comedy, forget making money, forget all that. I got a personal relationship with Jesus. Like that's where my life went. And I wouldn't trade that for the world. Like I learned how to give and receive love. And then once you have that, hey man, that's really what life's about. But I'm telling you, if it's something you want to do, just do it. Like there's never going to be a perfect time.
Right.
And like, it's awesome that I'm getting to mentor this guy where it's his lifelong dream to do comedy. Because it's like, how can I say this? We make it out to be too big of a deal, somewhat, you know, because you love it so much. You know, it's like having a crush on a girl and she's perfect in your head. And you're like, I'll ask her out tomorrow. I'll ask her out tomorrow. Like, you know, because you've made it to be too much in your head. Like, I just made this dude have been preparing for years to do an open mic. And I'm like, all right, nobody, it's just going to be me and you. Let's just go suck. Just get it over with. Don't even worry about your jokes. I don't care if you have any jokes. Just go do it. Just do it. Get that experience of what it's like to move the mic stand behind you, have a light in your face, talking to a microphone. I go, that's what's going to be important. We're just talking basics, basics, basics. And he's like, what if I'm not funny? I'm like, nobody's going to be funny there. It's an open mic. Like, just start. Just get it started. Like, whatever it is, start now. Just start. And if that's something you really want to do, I will help you any way. I feel like Mickey talking to Rocky right now. I'm like, I can help you. I could. I can help.
I love it.
Anybody watching this, find me on social media. Shoot me a message. And if there's anything I can do to help you live your dream, I will.
I love that, man. That's so crazy, man. That's not even, it's really crazy to hear somebody who's accomplished as you to like, who's gotten this far in the comedy game to say that, man, because it's tough, man. Like, it's like you said, dude, it's those open mics, man. Those are the Lost Boys, you know? And like you walking back in, you're Peter Pan. They're like, oh shit, Peter's back. Like he made like one of us who made it out is back and he's like joining us. And it's just so exciting. They're not even mad at Peter. They're just like, oh, like, what's it like to be a grown up? Tell us, like, you know, show us all your wisdom. And that's my favorite part about, you know, at least good people in comedy is the ones, even at the bottom, they're not envious of the ones at the top. They're just like inspired and admired. They admire them. Like, dude, like your story's awesome, man. I love it. And then the people at the top, the ones that still are really good people are like, I want to give back to those twos at the bottom.
100%. Those, like, I think like last night I got to talk to a kid that was 2 years in. And it was awesome. Like, he was just such a cool dude. Like, he looked like a young Quentin Tarantino. And he talked like a young Quentin. He looked like Tarantino with glasses. And I was like, he had so much passion for comedy. And he had such great questions. And I remember, like, I was like, here's the thing, dude. Comedy's a team sport. Life is a team sport. It's like, you need mentors, but mentors also need to give back. Like, every time I'm giving advice now, because it's like this has been just for the last 2 weeks, like I found like a guy that I could help. I'm relearning so much. It's such a good thing for me, and it's inspiring me to do better. It's inspiring me to write more. it's inspiring me to figure out what I really want to say. Because as I'm giving him advice, I'm going, why aren't you doing this? And I'm like, yeah. And then like, I'm so in love with comedy right now because the pandemic knocked it out of me, to be honest with you. It was 2:30 in the morning and I was watching a British documentary on Patrice O'Neill. And I'm like, man, comedy can be, it's the coolest thing in the world. And the world's so messed up right now. The world needs comedians. It needs somebody to, number one, bring some laughter, but also to tell people the truth. That's what we need.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I in a weird, like, funny way, I think comedians are going to be the ones that, like, figuratively save the world, not literally, but figuratively. I mean, they're the ones that you spark the creativity, you spark the courage of somebody sitting in a chair. When you can make someone laugh at themselves by just telling them how hypocritical they are, but you did it in such an elegant way that it didn't hurt their feelings. It made them go, damn, I am kind of dumb on that. Like, and it makes them laugh a little bit. You actually, you're way more effective than any sociology professor who's just yelling at you about how ignorant you are about the world and stuff. Cause you're just angry saying like, okay, man, well, you don't know me, whatever. But when a comedian does it, he's going to literally get the point that the sociology professor is going to do, but get it across in such a funny way that you may have just changed that kid's life forever. He's going to go home and like rethink everything he thinks about everything. You go, wow, like I'm wrong about a lot of stuff. Like, or maybe I'm not wrong. I'm unsure about a lot of things. I was so sure about it going into that show. Now I'm not. And
such a good point. Like there's one of my oldest friends in comedy, and the dude's a brilliant stand up and a great writer. His name's Mike Black. And I don't know, I was going through like old notebooks, like stuff I've stacked up in my garage. And I found a quote from him. I'll paraphrase it. I don't remember the quote, but I remember writing it down. Like the best kind of laughter is the type that makes people feel less lonely. Like there's something about certain kinds of jokes that'll reshape, like we're like, I thought I was the only one that felt that way. It's a cool thing we get to do.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I think I wanted to ask you about that too. What was the thing that helped you with getting through the loneliness of comedy? Because I feel like that's a question comedians don't get asked often enough. Like it's a lonely thing a lot of the times. It's full of a ton of highs. The dopamine rushes are tremendous. Just getting on stage is one, killing it is another one. But I know the self-doubt creeps in to everybody. You know, it is what it is. I'm sure there's a bit you used in your special, which I thought was funny, where you're like, everyone's checking in on you in your first 2 years. And after that, everyone's like, you're still doing that?
Yeah.
that was funny as hell. Yeah.
So
like,
true.
Yeah.
I was so blessed that I really started my career at the Comedy Store. Like I had said, I'd probably done like 15 spots before that. But when I was that a Death Squad mug?
No, it's for a podcast, Alternate Take.
Oh, dude, that's sweet.
Thanks, man.
I got my honeydew, Ryan Sickler honeydew.
There it is.
but the Comedy Store, it really, especially during the years when the place was, nobody was going there other than comedians. And there was no light at the end of the tunnel. Comedy 20 years ago was not the industry it is now. It was before social media. It was before podcasts. And the game plan used to be you get on the Tonight Show, you do a set where somebody could see your sitcom and you got a development deal to develop a TV show. But that crashed when I got to Hollywood because it was like the beginning of reality television. It was that awful dark period of comedy where network TV was all reality shows and podcasts hadn't really been invented yet. Social media. So there was no, like, people, we just were going to the Comedy Store because we loved it. And you made these friendships that really are family. Like, there's something about suffering that can form bonds. And I think that's probably why the military puts guys in boot camp and stuff like that. Because, like, that was my first 10 years at the Comedy Store. It was, I mean, I remember being so poor, Ari Shaffir taking me out for Chinese food once a month, like a grandma, like as a treat. Cause like, I didn't have any money to order something like that. And he'd be like, I got you, dude. We're getting Chinese tomorrow. We're going to go see a movie. Like my friend, I remember once me and Ari going to the movies during the day, driving home from San Diego. And it blew my mind. I'm like, it's a Wednesday and we're at the movies. This is the coolest thing ever. Like, the loneliness wasn't that lonely because I had a band of brothers.
Wow. Does that make sense? No, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think you're completely right. I think you may go in thinking this is a lonely man. It's kind of like a jiu-jitsu. Like you go in thinking it's just me. I'm going in. No one's forcing me to go, and I'm going to go learn. And then it's going to suck, but hopefully I get better. And then you don't realize, holy crap, man, everyone here is doing the same thing. And then Now we're all rolling together, and now I'm, you know, now we're friends, and you know, we sweat together, and I smell that guy. He smells like ass every time I roll with that guy, but we're, you know, it's always something.
Dude, it's the same thing, but you're not going to get hurt. Like, it's even better than jiu-jitsu. But it is so similar. Like, I knew God was real because when I first started jiu-jitsu, every kindness I had ever showed a young comedian was paid back to me tenfold by badass jiu-jitsu guys.
That's so awesome.
Like I showed up I didn't know how to put my pants on. Like I literally, they gave me that like really cheap free gi that you get when you roll. And I had the pants on backwards. I still don't even know how to tie my belt. But over at Chris Lissandro's Street Sports, I take the morning class and it would be like 8 black belts and 2 white belts. And we would always go high belt, low belt. And all those black belts, they were assassins. But the coolest, nicest people ever, ever. And I'm like, it's the same lessons. Just keep showing up.
That's it.
Like, you know Uncle Joey's book yet?
So I bought it. I have it at the house. It's here right now. And I've been
incredible. It's so incredible. But that's one of the lessons in it. It's just like, you just keep showing up. That's it.
Yeah.
I was talking to a Navy SEAL. It was fascinating. It was the reason why I wanted to start my podcast, Good Times, because I had a roommate in LA, my buddy Jay, who's one of the coolest dudes I've ever met. Like, you know, there's I think I'm nice. And some people are like, oh, he's cool. Yeah. But when they say I'm cool, they mean like, he'll drive you to the airport. You know what I mean? Like, but then there's like, oh, that dude's too cool to be hanging out with me. That was my buddy Jay. Steve Renazzisi, who's like a legit brother to me, like Ari and Renazzisi, Uncle Joey, these were the guys that got me through those really dark, the darkest period of my life. Like you talked about loneliness. I remember, and I'll always love him for this. I remember Christmas Eve, 2001, Uncle Joey and Terry invited me over for Christmas Eve.
Wow.
But I was so depressed, I couldn't even leave my apartment. But just knowing I had an invitation helped me get to sleep that night.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Just knowing. Dude, I forgot what I was going to tell you about Renazzisi. Man, but that dude, he let me stay at his apartment for free. Let me stay at his apartment for free. Because Renazzisi was the first one out of all of us to make it. So he had a 2-bedroom condo. He knew I had no money. I wanted to quit. I couldn't afford to quit. And he let me live there for free. And then he was like, hey, man, my buddy Jay needs a place to crash. So Jay wasn't my buddy. He was buddies with Renazzisi. Jay was this badass surfer dude from Jersey, like, but a legit surfer. And he was a photographer for celebrities. Like if Taylor Swift was launching a new campaign, she'd be like, give me Jay. Like, so he's killing it. He married a Rockette. Like this dude, he kills life. And like the most, like, and he was a master chef. So whenever Jay was in town, he'd hook it up and like, we would just laugh and I would just feel cooler hanging out with him. So one day Jay's like, oh my, I'm not even gonna say the dude's name. It's that much of a badass. He goes, my buddy so-and-so's gonna come hang out. You're gonna love him. He's he's been a career Navy SEAL. And I'm like, what? Because, like, I love, bro, I'm like 11. Like, all those guys to me are legit superheroes.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting down at this table with this guy that they call it developmental group. It's like what we call SEAL Team 6, but they don't call it that. They call it like Gold Team. So I don't know. They have all the real names. So I'm sitting down with this guy, and he's asking me all these questions about comedy. And I'm asking him all these questions about being a SEAL. And he's like, dude, it's the same thing. He's like, I didn't know what I was going to do. He's like, I wanted to quit. He goes, every night I would fall asleep saying I'm going to quit tomorrow. But then I didn't have another option. So I was like, I guess I'll just keep showing up. And I'm like, that's what I did with comedy. I didn't know. Like, God put me in a place where that was it.
Wow.
He put me exactly where, and I had to learn how to rely on his strength.
Wow. You know what's funny, man, is like, it's so cool to see how you guys started from, like, you know, door guys at the store and maintaining your friendships. But I think what was really cool for us, listeners of comedy over the last 10 years, longer, probably like 15 years, is you guys have done a good job of, like, of always saying how important those days were. Cause we kind of feel like, as listeners, like, man, like, I want a friendship like that. Like, these dudes who started from nothing together with, like, Ran Azizi and Ari Shaffir, and now they're all big time and they're still, like, super close friends. But you guys do a really good job of at least explaining how much you love each other and telling your war stories, and it gives people hope into thinking not anything in entertainment is tainted by just, like, narcissism. It's not just tainted by just, like, you know, I'm successful now, screw everybody else. Like, you guys got there and you guys bring each other on each other's podcasts, and you guys are at a kid's, you know, kids' birthday parties and stuff, and inviting over for Christmas Eve. Like, that's just, I think that's really cool. I think that's what makes comedy unique as to where other maybe avenues of entertainment, like, you're not going to find that maybe in Hollywood, like in the actor world. It's a little bit more.
And I would even say there was just something so special about the Comedy Store.
Yeah. Oh, you my know? God. It's the best. The documentary, I don't know if any documentary can ever do it justice, but man, I loved it. I thought it was great.
I didn't even see it because I knew they wouldn't. How can I say this? I heard it was amazing and I'm glad everybody loved it. But I was like, there's no way they're going to be able to capture it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine, man. It's the hub.
We had a foosball table. Peter Shore made the mistake of donating a foosball table to the comics, and this has to be like 2005, 2004. I mean, there were nights at the Comedy Store where there was no audience. We couldn't start a show.
Yeah.
So, like, on an average night, there might be like 20 people down in the original room. It got to the point where nobody, not a door guy, not a cover booth guy, not a parking lot guy, everybody was upstairs. It looked like an underground chicken fight, rooster fight. Like, there's sweat, cigarette, people betting, 30 degenerate comedians around the foosball table. And the best at it was Sebastian. Sebastian's in the zone, just killing everybody in foosball. And I remember, like, they were the same years we had a water balloon launcher. And one of the hottest nightclubs in the city at the time was called Sky Bar. It was right across the street from the Comedy Store. We'd go on the roof of the Comedy Store and launch water balloons at all the cool people in the Skyball. LAPD would circle a helicopter above the building. I remember once doing a show in Ontario, coming back to the store, and everybody's running through the building. I'm like, what's going on? And the cops were chasing comedians through the building. Ari and Ran Azizi had a casino. They had a roulette table and blackjack in the main room.
Oh my God. It's like the night, the Roxbury days. Everyone has their silk Ricky Martin shirt on.
Yes. Balloons. Dude, it was. And then I would wind up working at a gym out there. So I got to know all the bouncers and stuff because they all worked out there. They were like, it was you, Dix. I was the guy in the suit with the clipboard. I'm like, sorry, dude. We didn't know.
Oh man. That's what's amazing about the stories. Like you said, there's nights with no people, and like, you hear that from like these high level comedians who are like, yeah, we had nobody. And like, next thing you know, Dr. Dre walks in with like six people. You're like, that's no other club would have that, where we go from nobody to Dr. Dre coming in, hanging out with this whole crew. Or I went once to the belly room.
Going in.
Oh, sorry. Good.
But no, it was during those years. And I was, thank you for calling the world famous comedy store. This is Steve. How may I help you? This is Shook. What? Right away, sir. Like, I start to tell stories that I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to think.
Yeah, I don't need to ask his last name. I know who Shook is. Yeah. I went once in the Bell Room like on a Wednesday, and it was like directly next to me was Terrell Owens and his whole crew of whoever he was with. And I was like, and if, as an adult, I don't really fanboy out much. It's not like in me anymore. Like, but I remember thinking when I was there, I was like, dude, if I was like 13 when I was here and Terrell Owens here, like I may have bugged him. I would for sure have bothered him. I don't think he would have had fun because I'd have been like, dude, you're Terrell Owens. Like, what? He would have hated being here next to me, but I'm like 25 and I didn't say one word to the guy. I was like, let him enjoy the show.
Dude, I'm like, watching the show.
Yeah. If I go to the restroom and you're pissing next to me, I'll say, what's up, man? And that's about it. But I'm not going to ask you for nothing. That's not me. It's not in me at all. But I remember thinking like, man, like this place really is insane. Like it's, insane. When the Comedy Store was at its peak, I remember I saw a show at the store. It was a Thursday. And I remember the headliners were enough for me to go, that's like tremendous. I'm going to that. It was like Joey, Tom Segura, and I think the other guy, I think it was Bill Burr or Mark Maron and Bill Burr. Yeah. So that's like, all right. Yeah, it was incredible. Those four guys, I was like, I'm going in the original room. And every time the next person was to go up, they're like, oh, we have a surprise guest. And it was like Chappelle's walking in. Oh, we have a surprise guest. And then it was like, oh, it was like Louis walking in. And you're like, dude, it was, and then Joe's going up. And you're like, it was insane. You went up. I forgot how many, Chris D'Elia went up. It was just like, it was almost every comedian saw how many other good ones were going. We're like, let's just all go up there. And everyone went. And it was like, I cannot believe I was here for like $25. I think.
Yeah. There was a moment in time that I think it was just, I'm so grateful to have witnessed it.
Yeah.
Like there was a moment in time where the Comedy Store was the absolute coolest place on earth. Like there was, I don't care how much money you had, private jets, you're going to Milan, whatever. No, you're not going to have more fun. It was impossible to have more fun than the Comedy Store from like, as soon as Joe came back up until the pandemic. It was insane.
It was insane.
It was like not even, and I was smart enough. I had enough self-awareness to really soak it in and really, really, really appreciate it. And I'm beyond grateful. You know how you get those little gut feelings? And I did not have a spot on the Wednesday night before we shut down for the pandemic. I had a spot Tuesday, and then I was supposed to do a main room spot on Friday. But something told me, just go. And it was the Wednesday, and they shut down, I think, Thursday night. And it was the last magical night at the Comedy Store. Tripoli had his show going in the main room. The OR was stacked. The back comedian bar was jumping. And I didn't know that was going to be the last time. But I remember everything about it. Does that make sense? Wow. Like, that's I remember everything about it. And it's just not going to be the same. But the beautiful thing is Joe has taken the best of the Comedy Store and now planted it in Austin.
Yes.
That tree will be the new, he's the new Mitzi. It's the weirdest thing. Like Joe right now is both Johnny Carson and Mitzi Shore. And it's all concentrated in one place. So I tell all the young comedians I'm starting to meet here in Florida, I'm like, the business has changed. You don't need to move to New York or LA to make it anymore because you might just shoot a video and it's going to go viral. Like podcasting, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, that's the new network. And who knows how you have access to that from anywhere where you are. And I go, you can make it, but you'll never be a great comic unless you're hanging out, living in community with other great comics. There's just no way. You're not going to be the best version of yourself. Like, I remember following Louis. I remember following Chappelle. I remember following Fahim Anwar doing this character. There's certain, and you, I remember following Jezelneck, and I'm like, Bert Kreischer ripping his shirt off. Like, how do you follow these things? You have to live it. It's like getting punched in the face.
Right.
So I tell the young guys, I go, look, you can stay here, get on stage and do all your social media stuff. But if you want to become great, get to Austin. Wow. Get to Austin and figure out a way to become part of the mothership. Even if it takes you 5 years, it's worth it. Took me 8 years to get past at the Comedy Store with Paulie Graham there.
Wow, man. That's so inspiring, man. I'm telling you, it's so damn inspiring.
We didn't have a car for 5 years, 6 years. I would walk to the Comedy Store, even on my nights off, just to watch people do what I wanted to do.
Wow. Unbelievable, man. It's true. That desire that, like, I don't care what it is. I just want to be around it. I remember one time I went to the store like 4 or 5 years ago, and my buddy had a ticket. He's like, oh, I'm going to the Comedy Store tonight. And he was the only one I ever talked podcast with. And I was like, dude, at first I was like, why don't you get me a ticket too? He's, you know, like, I'm naive. We didn't even have any money. I was like, he probably just used his credit card. But I was like, dude, let me go. Like, I'll go with you. Like, if I don't get in line, I'll literally just take like a train back or something. And I remember I went and we got to the door and he's like, hey, dude, sorry, we're sold out. And I was like, sucks, man. I remember, like, I don't know what I put on Instagram, but I may have put like, I'm at the store and can't get in. Sucks. Like, you know, and Sam Tripoli wrote back to me and he's like, hey, dude, you still here? I can get you in. And I was like, and he doesn't even know who I am. I'm just some random dude. Like, he wasn't like, he never met me. I could be Sam. You know, I could be a loser. Like, you know,
Tripoli and Ari have the biggest hearts in comedy.
Oh my God.
Gabriel Iglesias too. Jesus Trejo too. But there's something about Tripoli. I don't know, man. Like, he's a saint. I really believe he is.
Yeah.
Like, capital S. He's the real deal.
I was so damn honored. There's a part of me that laughed. I wanted to tell people, yeah, Tripoli got me in here. Like, I didn't know who the guy was, but I was like, dude, like, I was so honored by that, man. Like, I've been a big fan of his ever since. But, like, it's the same thing. Like, almost the universe tells you, like, there's going to be a way you're going to get in if you really show you want to be there. Mm-hmm. And if you really put the work in and you really do have a passion for it, because the passion turns into talent, you know?
Yeah.
And it's exciting talking to people like you, man. It really does get me motivated, gets me inspired, man. Especially someone who does comedy like you, man. Like, the clean style of comedy, it to me is the hardest thing in the world. It's the hardest thing. I think it's easier to be like a goon and say all these crazy things because the shock value. But man, like, you're just naturally really funny, you know. And you're one of those people that can talk about family stuff and make it really funny. Like, that's so damn hard to do, man. And I think that's why I respect you so much, man, because it's not just about giving back. It's also about you know being as talented as you've been, man. It does matter. And it's, man, dude, I commend you for it, dude. Really do.
No more compliments. It makes me very but yeah, to be there during those years. And now I kind of feel like I'm in fight camp right now. Like, I have a new manager. First thing they want me to do is put out an hour special, but they want the old material. But there's so much more I want to say. There's been so much I've experienced during this. America post-pandemic is a different society than we were going into it.
Absolutely.
And I need to comment on that. And I'm so excited to be in love with stand-up again. It took a long time. Like, I thought it was the end of the world. I just wanted to take care of my parents. I wanted to get out of LA. I wanted to take a breather and just see what was happening. And I got really sick of the sound of my own voice. But now I'm like, okay, I got a new manager. They want the hour special. I'm starting to figure out little rooms here in Florida where I can get on stage, start to work this stuff out. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see what I could really do. And I want to get it together before I hit up the mothership. Because to me, that's the new, I mean, those lineups that Joe's put together, and it just looks like so much fun. And it's like, he brought the best of the Comedy Store with him. You know, he brought Curtis, he brought Adam, you know what I mean? He brought some of the wait staff, he brought Kerry. Like, it's the Comedy Store in Texas, which is, sounds like too good to be true, you know? So wow. I can't wait to check it out.
Yeah, that's something I got to do. I got to get down there, man. I got to get down there, because I would imagine even the minor leagues down there are tremendous. I bet the open mics that's down there are killing it. Like, yes. Everything's got to be like, because you're just trying to get just a 5-minute spot down there at the mothership. So there's got to be the open mics. I'm sure the levels elevate. Everything's got to be awesome around there.
God bless Tony Hinchcliffe. Like, I remember when he was starting Kill Tony, and I thought it was a really good idea. But I didn't realize the impact it would have.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like American Idol for comedians. You know what I mean?
It really is.
But like, not a fake Hollywood overproduced version, but like, no, you just show up, be a soldier, and you just get on that show and you can go. Like, that's incredible. Like, I think that you talk about the brotherhood of comedy and everybody helping each other out. And then those Comedy Store years. And then when Joe came back to the club, it was like getting the captain of the quarterback, the captain of your team back. Or I always used to say Joe Rogan was the sheriff of if the Comedy Store was the town, Joe was the sheriff. Because I remember, and I'm not going to mention any, there were famous comedians that had a bad reputation for stealing material, more than one. And then Joe would confront them. And people, number one, respected Joe as a comic. They respected him. But they also knew he could kick their ass. there's a level where you're not going to, like, Joe will choke you out in a second. He'll break your leg with a roundhouse kick. But he brought so much love to the Comedy Store and people helping people. Like, that dude's made more millionaires than anybody in since Mitzi Shore. Joe Rogan, it went, Mitzi made the most millionaires, Joe's number two. And to have that, like, you know, like, if Joe's the tree, well, I'd say he's a branch off the Comedy Store tree. But then look what Tony Hinchcliffe learned from Joe, and look at all the people Tony's bringing up with him. Look at all the people Tom and Bert are bringing up. Look at all the people Ari. I mean, I have a house right now because of Ari Shaffir. You know what I mean? Because wow. He gave me the opportunity to be on his TV show. He let me help produce that TV show. If I can't pay my bills 1 month, I know I could call Ari and he'll let me go open up for him. And I'm like, okay, I got my mortgage this month.
Wow.
It's awesome. And you need that. You need people. It's a give and a take. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Awesome to be part of, and to know it's going to go on for another generation because of what Joe's doing in Texas is awesome.
I love that. I think Patrick David Bett just said recently, like, on a podcast,
that guy's great.
He's great. Yeah, I just heard a clip about what he's something about.
And Vinny on there. You know, Vinny's a comedian, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I like how on the podcast he's very intellectual, and he's like not really trying to be Mr. Giggles all the time, but god damn, the dude's funny.
Common sense.
Damn, yeah, funny. Common sense. Yeah. But he said something about networking. He's like, look, he's like basically paraphrasing what he said, but he basically said, like, look, like, losers, scumbags, people that really don't have any good intentions for you, their idea of networking is to, like, get something from you right away. What can I get from you right away? He's like, the true, like, essence of networking is, I don't want anything from you now, but I may ask you for something 15 years from now. And if I do, it's because we've built up 15 years of friendship, and that's what I'm asking you now. But it's not because I'm not asking you for anything because I want, again, to take something from you. It's because I need your help and you're my brother now. You know, something like that. But like, like, that's how you should always look at networking, is it's long term. Always don't even think about nothing. Just if something happens to pan out in the future, then it's
until then it's you just said networking. I'm like, yeah, I don't know how to network. I never tried it.
Yeah, I don't even know the concept.
And then I'm like, oh, I guess, like, especially if you're a business person, you would be like, oh, you're networking, you're building relationships. But no, man, I'm just making friends.
Yeah.
Like, And the truth is, like, I, there's nothing in this world I want other than that.
Right.
I just want that connection. Does that make sense? Like, I mean, that was one of the blessings of living in Hollywood for so long. Like, almost immediately, I met people that had everything I thought I wanted, and they weren't happy.
Yeah. Wow. It's so crazy.
So you're like, okay, you have the house at the top of the hills, you have the cars, you have the girls, but you're miserable. So I'm like, that's not it.
Yeah.
And the closer I've gotten to God, I'm like, oh, the world's a beautiful place. And anytime you can give and receive love, that's what it's about. But all the, like, I'm so happy I'm not a businessman. And I suck at the business of comedy. But I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't care. I'm like, as long as I have a roof over my head and there's something delicious in the fridge, like, that's it. That's all. You know what I mean? Like, I saw the car. Renazizi gave me a car. He gave me his 2006 Kia Sportage when he got a Range Rover. I still have the Kia. I had the Kia for 10 years. It's awesome. It's like, I don't, it rolls. I don't care. Who am I trying to impress?
Oh, yeah. It's funny because, you know, when it comes to anything like this, I'm exactly the same way. And it's like, it's beautiful because you will put emphasis on your passions, but people like us, we need managers. We need people that are business-like people around us, because I don't care if I make money. I don't care about any of that stuff. Like, and that's, you know, good, because the product I'm putting out, I'm proud of it, and I like it. I like to interview people, and I like to have a good time, and it's great. But like, someone who is a business mind is like, you should be doing this. I'm like, I know, man. It's just not me. Like, I need somebody.
And I suck at doing stuff too.
I'm like, if someone can help me out with that, that'd be cool. But I don't really care if it happens. This is just an awesome time for me. I always have a blast. And it, you know, you get your daily inspiration. I mean, this is Sunday, man. It's 9 a.m. It's 10 a.m. for me. And I just had an hour long, you know, friggin' confirmation speech, man. This is beautiful, man. This church. This is baptism. And
dude, whatever I can do to help you on your journey, just, I don't know what that is, but even if it's a bit you want to work out, or you're like, why isn't this working? I could help.
I really appreciate it, man. I really do. Trust me. That's huge for me, man. That's, you know, you've been one of my favorite comedians the last 10 years. So for you to say that means a lot to me.
Oh, thanks, man.
Hell yeah. So what's next? What's next? What do you got going on in the next couple months to look forward to? I want everyone to tune in and be like, all right, I got to tune in to Steve Simone in the next couple months.
Well, I don't want to. I'm working on a writing project with Uncle Joey. That if that happens, that would be a miracle. I did just get a really positive phone call about a feature film that I wrote. So I'm going to be lighting candles to see if that sells. But right now, like, I think like the next 6 months for me will be to at least get 1 hour filmed, and I don't know what they want to do with it. Like, I'd be happy just to put it out on YouTube. But I'm excited to be on stage again. And I'm excited to see where it's going to go. And like, this manager is awesome. He's so cool. He's the best. And they're like, dude, you have 3-4 hours worth of material nobody's seen. We want to share all of it. And I'm like, okay. But now I'm just trying to figure out, what else? Does that make sense? Like, it's the new stuff that's got me really excited.
Awesome. I love it. Steve Simone, you're the man, dude. Please tell everyone, like, your social media and everything, so that way you can go check it out, or like your websites, your YouTube, everything.
Yeah, awesomesteve.com, I think. I don't even check, like, we talk about being bad at business. I had a buddy make it for me. But I think there's a link to my Instagram and Twitter. I don't do TikTok. I probably should. Maybe I will. My buddy Josh blew up on it. But I don't know. Like, go to my Instagram. It's Steve, S-I-M-E-O-N-E, comedy. Steve Simone comedy. And I'm going to start posting more clips up there as I'm preparing towards the special.
Awesome. Steve Simone, you're the man. I had such a great time, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Right? Thank you.
Oh, man. Always is a blessing, brother. I appreciate you, man.
All right. You got my number.
Yeah, definitely.
Even when we end this podcast, call me and go, hey, man, here's the bit I'm trying to work on, or whatever it is.
Just got it. We'll do. I'll do it right now.
All right, please do. All right. God bless, buddy.
All right. Bye. This has been Awesome Take. We'll see you guys later. Peace. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Our interview with the great comedian, Steve Simone. I appreciate you stopping in, man. That was one of my favorite interviews ever. Bar none, man. That was such a great time. And for all you people out there listening who want to be comedians, I mean, you just got it right there. You got the playbook on how to become one. He even offered his help. You know, that's bananas. I don't know what anyone knows what that means, but that's like one of the best hitters in baseball just giving you free lessons just to, you know, because he knows he wants to go pro. That's insane. So thank you again, man. I appreciate you. I'm glad to call you a friend. All you guys who are Steve Simone fans, I put all of his links in the podcast description. And go check that out, man. He's an absolute killer, dude. And for all of you new Alternate Take fans, I put all of our stuff also in the podcast description. Go check out our Instagram at AlternateTakeDR. And I'm starting to put up more videos on YouTube now, man. Starting to expand, starting to grow. So go check that out. And that's it, man. Appreciate you guys. This has been Alternate Take. See you guys later. Peace.